Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we are learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves on Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, that's 16a, and we are starting on the fourth line down from the top, third word in from the line. This series of recordings is a joint project of OU Torah, the OU Department of Synagogue Services, and the Daf HaShavua Foundation. Now, in our previous recordings, we were talking about three different kinds of people who have limitations on their activities. One was an avel, a mourner. The second was a metzora, a person who has contracted this skin disease called tzara'at. And the third person was a menuda, a person who was under a ban of excommunication. So the Gemara now is going to digress from its originally scheduled programming to discuss in more depth some of the halachot related to excommunication, which is mostly a institution that we don't have anymore, though there are still a few remnants of it that are found in halacha, but mostly we don't have it anymore. And the Gemara is going to teach us 15 halachot related to the laws of excommunication. So we begin by stating, Amar Rava. Rava says, Minalan, what is the biblical source? De Meshadrin Shlicha de Beidina, that we send a shaliach of the court. That is, we send an emissary of the court to summon someone to the court. This is equivalent to serving someone with a subpoena or a summons to the court. There is a girsa problem here. According to the Hagos HaBach, the two halachot that are learned here, the first two halachot are, the second one is that we send a shaliach of the court. The first one is tekavinan duchta. They add in the words tekavinan duchta, that we establish a specific court, and then we send a shaliach of the court to summon the people to judgment. In the Gemara text that we have in front of us, it says, Dimishadran shlicha de bedina, that we send the emissary of the court, umizamnin le ledina, and we summon him to judgment. The reason why the Bach takes this out is because the next halacha, the third halacha, has mizamnin ledina, that we summon him to judgment. So it seems redundant to have them here. The Marsha is a way of, you know, saying that both might work, that there are two different kinds of summons. But it makes more sense to say that the first two halachot are one that you establish a court, and once you've established the court, you send a shaliach of the Beit Din to summon them, so the judges themselves don't have to go to the place where the litigant is. They summon the litigant to come to them. Dichtiv, as it is written, this is in Bamidbar chapter Tetzayin, Bamidbar chapter 16, and it is the case of Korach and Datan and Aviram. So when Korach and Datan and Aviram rebel against Moshe, Moshe convenes a court, Vayishlach Moshe, and Moshe sends. So when it says Moshe sends, it means he sends an emissary, he sends a shaliach. Likro l'Datan v'la Aviram b'nei Eliyav, to call Datan and Aviram, the children of Eliyav, the sons of Eliyav, to come to the court. Now, it's not 100% clear from this verse whether or not this, the first halacha, the kavinan duchta, that they established a court, is true here. You could say that that's what Moshe did, that Moshe established his court and then he sent an emissary, but it's not 100% clear from here. So in that regard, it might make more sense to say that we could also learn mizamnin le'ledina, that we summon them to judgment because he told them likro. You could say vayishlach is the halacha of sending the emissaries of the court, and likro is the halacha of summoning them to court. However, the next halacha seems to say the same thing. Uminalan demizamninan ledina. Where do we know that we summon them to judgment? Dichtiv, as it says, Vayomer Moshe el Korach, and Moshe said to Korach, Ata v'choladatecha, you and your whole congregation have to come before me for judgment. So he actually learns it from this other pasuk related to Korach and not related to the verses related to Datan and Aviram. Okay, the fourth halacha is Lekami Gavra Rabba, that you have to summon them before a great person, a person who is worthy of judgment. Tichtiv, as it says, Lifnei Hashem, before God, that is a person who represents Hashem. The fifth halacha is at upalnya, that you have to specify who the litigants are. It has to clearly say who's being summoned, you and so-and-so, like Ploni. Dichtiv, as it is written, ata vahem ve'aron, you and they and Aaron. Those are the litigants. It's Korach and his edah against Aaron, because Aaron was the one Korach was saying that Aaron was improperly given a leadership role, a nepotistic leadership role, and that Korach and his group of Kohanim should have been treated with the same respect. So they are the litigants. He defamed Aaron's status. And so he has to be summoned in court. So in this case, it seems like the Baal Din is Aaron and Korach, and Moshe therefore is the Dayan. He's the judge, and then he sends an emissary. We don't know who that emissary is, to summon that Korach to come treat with Aaron. Presumably, he should have sent an emissary to bring Aaron to judgment too. But I guess if Aaron was perfectly willing to come of his own accord, plus he is the accuser, so they didn't need to summon him. The sixth halacha is the kavinan zimna, that you establish a time in the subpoena. You tell them, this is the time when you have to appear at court. Dichtiv, as it says, machar, he says, tomorrow you have to come to court. And now an additional halacha is zimna batar zimna, time after time. That is that we are lenient with them. We give them as many chances as we can. So the halacha, as it's mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, this is the 11th siman of Choshen Mishpat, he says that we actually give them three chances. You summon them to the first time to the court. If they don't show, you summon them a second time. If they don't show, you summon them a third time. And only after they don't show up, after the third summons, then you can excommunicate them. You can put them into a nidui, but you give them three times. So the source for this comes from Yirmiyahu Dichtiv, as it says, Karu Sham Paro Melech Mitzrayim Sha'on He'evir Hamo'ed. Now, the story that we're talking about here is a prophecy that Hashem made to Yirmiyahu, that Nebuchadnezzar would, who was the king of Babylonia, would have a war with Paro, the king of Egypt, and he would destroy him. So what happens, without getting into all the details of the pasuk, is the last two lines, He'evir Hamo'ed, the time has passed, is that the original time that Hashem set up for Nebuchadnezzar and Melech and Paro to meet up, when it didn't happen. Nebuchadnezzar did not show up at that time, and so it seems like the people in Egypt and Paro thought that they were free, or home free, or that the prophecy was untrue, that he wasn't going to come. But what we learn from this, and it says in the continuation of the verse, is that Hashem set a second time for Nebuchadnezzar to come meet Paro. In other words, just because there is a date for judgment that passes doesn't mean you can't set another date for judgment. Now, from this source, we should only learn two sources, an original date of judgment and then a second date of judgment. But the halacha, as the Shulchan Aruch mentions it, as I said, is that you give them three chances. Uminalan, oops, I forgot to count this in my list of 15, so we must have actually 16 halachot. Uminalan, di'i mitpaker b'shlicha de'beidina, va'ate va'amar, lo mitchaze kilish nabisha. No, that's not true. This is all one together. That if the person who's being summoned, so the shaliach of the Beit Din goes to summon a person, and he is mitpaker b'shlicha, he denigrates the shaliach, meaning he says, go jump in a lake, I'm not going to your court. And or he takes the summons and throws it back in his face. So he is mitpaker b'shlicha de Beit Din, he denigrates the emissary of the court, va'ate, and then the emissary comes back to the court, the Amar, and says, lo mitchaze, the Amar, and he says that what he did. In other words, he reports it. He's like, oh, he took the summons, ripped it up, and threw it back in my face, and said, take this back to your stupid court. Lo mitchaze kilish nabisha. This is not considered lashon hara. The emissary of the court is allowed to report what happened to him when he delivered the summons. In halacha, we actually take it a step further, and we say that he's believed, even to the point at which he is almost considered to be like two edim, like his testimony about what the guy did as far as denigrating him is admissible in court. The source of this is back to Korach, Dichtiv, as it says, Haineha anashima haim tenaker. Will our eyes be torn out? They're like, you could tear out our eyes and we still won't come to your court. So he reports that back to Moshe, what they said to him, and that's how we learn that what is said to them is admissible and kosher, and it's kosher to say such a thing. It's not lashon hara. Okay, the ninth halacha, uminalan, and what is the source? Dimishamtinan, that after they denigrate the emissary of the court, or if they don't show up for their summons, that you can excommunicate them. You can put them into a shamta. There is some discussion about what level of excommunication a shamta is. We know that there is a lower level of excommunication called nidui, which is, let's say, a minor form of shunning. And there is a major form, which is called cherem. So we know that nidui is a lighter form, and cherem is a heavier form. The question is shamta an intermediate form of excommunication, or is it a general term that encompasses both nidui and cherem? So that's not clear. The Rishonim disagree. But it is some form of excommunication. So how do we know that if they don't listen to the summons, you can put them into under a ban, under some form of excommunication? Dichtiv, as it is written, this pasuk is in a new place. This is from Shoftim. And in Shoftim, Barak and Devorah go to war against the enemies, and they summon their allies to come and help them in their battle. So it seems like many of their allies came, but in Shirat Devorah, in the song that Devorah sings after the battle, one of their allies is cursed. And it seems from the pasuk that he's cursed because he didn't, you know, he was a banner man, and he didn't listen to the summons from his ally to come help them, and since he didn't help them in their battle, he brings down a curse upon him. So as it said, Oru Meiros, curse Meiros, this language of Oru is to curse, as like what Hashem says to Avram, Umekalelcha Aor, those who curse you, I will curse. So he says, Oru Meiros, curse Meiros, and he'll explain, Dahachi Svara de Gava Rabba, the understanding of this verse is that he is a great person, that Meiros was like a general or a head of an army. Dichtiv, as it is written, Amar Malach Hashem, that the Malach Hashem said to him, and the Rashi says Malach Hashem here means Barak, that when Barak summoned Meiros, he should have come to the battle. But in the Pasuk there in Shoftim, as we'll see in a minute, it explains exactly what he was supposed to do and that he didn't do. That he was supposed to come. It says, Ki lo ba'ula ezrat Hashem. He did not come to the help of the army of God when he was summoned. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Uminalan, and what is the source? This is the 10th teaching. De macharaminan, that you can put him into a cherem, which is the most severe form of excommunication. Dichtiv oru, because it says oru arur. In the psukim, the few psukim that deal with cursing Meiros, it mentions the language of cursing three times. And as we'll see in a minute, when you put someone in a cherem, well, we'll see here that they're that it repeats, the cherem repeats. It doesn't, until he is released from it, it continues to roll over 30 days at a time. Okay, the 11th halacha here is, de achil v'shate bahadei v'ka'e ba'arba amot didei. Once a person is put into a cherem, part of the curse is that other people are not supposed to associate with them. They're supposed to shun them. So any person who achil, who eats and drinks with him, or comes and spends time close to him within in his dalet amos, you know, basically acts as his ally or his friend while he is under the excommunication, the curse extends to them as well. So if you violate the ban, the curse against the excommunicated person goes on you as well. Now, I don't know if that means only in a heavenly sense, or that when a person associates with a person who's under excommunication, they too get put under excommunication. It would seem like you would need a separate act of Beit Din to excommunicate those people, and maybe they are liable for that kind of judgment, or if it just means that the curse of Hashem that's upon them for becoming an excommunicate would also apply to those people who show favor and support to them in violation of the ban. Dichtiv, what's the source that we know that the people that associate with him? Because when it says Oru Meiros, it also says Yoshveha, those who live with her, those who live, her inhabitants, meaning not just Meiros, but those who are living with Meiros as well and are complicit in his lack of help. The 12th teaching is Uminalan de Partinan Chata'eha. How do you know that when the Beit Din excommunicates someone that they have to put out a public announcement of why it is that they are excommunicating them, Bitzibura, in public, Dichtiv, as it is written, and this is the end of the pasuk about cursing Meiros, Ki lo ba'ul ezrat Hashem, because he didn't come to help the army, to help Hashem. When Devorah and Barak were going into battle, they summoned him to come, and he didn't come. V'amar Ula said, B'dalid mea shipure shamte Barak lemaros. Ula says that when Barak excommunicated Meroz, he blew 400 shofars. And this actually is part of the excommunication process. The procedure is that, and we'll see this again later, that they blow a shofar to show that he's excommunicated. So in this case, it was a great man and a great man and two generals, so they didn't just blow one shofar, they blew 400 shofars. Now there is a dispute about Meroz, an interesting dispute. Ika de Amri, there are those who say Gavra Rabahava, that he was a great man, which is how we said it earlier, that he was like a general of an army. The Ika de Amri, and there are some who say Kochava Hava, that he was a star. So remember, this is in the Song of Devorah, and she is talking about, she's writing in poetry. So perhaps Meroz is a constellation, or the way Rashi says it is Mazale de Sisra, that he was Sisra's heavenly advocate. And so they're cursing not only Sisra, who was defeated in the battle and killed, but also Sisra's heavenly constellation. Shenemar, as it says, min shamayim nilchavu ha-kochavim, that from heaven the stars were battling also in this war that was happening on earth with Barak and Devorah. There was also a heavenly battle as well. So there are some who say that Meroz was not a flesh and blood person, but that this was a poetic description of his mazel. Okay, the 13th halacha is uminalan de mafkarina nichse, that the court can, if they choose to, not only excommunicate a person who refuses a summons, but they can also appropriate his property. Dichtiv, as it is written, this is a new source, this is our fourth source. So we've seen sources from Bamidbar related to Korach. We've seen a source from Yirmiyahu related to Nebuchadnezzar and Paro. We saw a source from Shoftim related to Barak and Devorah. And this is our fourth source, which is Ezra. And in Ezra's case, when Ezra returned from Babel to Jerusalem, he found that many of the Jewish men that were there had intermarried. They had married non-Jewish wives, and he felt that it was a mission critical to the building of the second Beit HaMikdash that they divorce those wives and marry only Jewish women. And he and Nehemiah, as we'll see in a minute, underwent a major effort and initiative to get all of the Jewish men to divorce their non-Jewish wives. And it says, so he summons them all to come to the site of the Beit HaMikdash so that he can get them to send away their wives. V'chol asher lo yavo lishloshet hayamim, anyone who does not come within 3 days, ba'atzat asarim, according to the instruction of the princes, v'azakenim, and the elders, yocharam kol rosho, all of his property shall be put in cherem, that is, put in escrow, and he will be separated out from the community of the dispersed Jews that are there. So this is used as a source, actually, all throughout Shas, of an important principle about a beitin, which is hefker beitin hefker, that a monetary court has the right to make ownerless someone's property. They can appropriate property by fiat if they make that decision, and this is the source for that. But the context here was that he was summoning them to court to instruct them that they needed to send away their non-Jewish wives. Okay, uminalan, and what is the source? Dinatzinan velaitinan umachinan vitalshinan se'ar umashbeinan. That you can do these 5 other things to someone. The court has the right to do these other things. The natsinan, they can chastise them, that is, verbally abuse them. Velaitinan also, and, the natsinan means challenge them. Velaitinan means to curse them, to verbally abuse them. Umachinan, to strike them. Vitalshinan se'ar, to pull out their hair. Umashbeinan, to tie them up. That the court has all of these sort of extrajudicial pressures that they can put to bear, dichtiv, as it is written in Nehemiah, the Ariv Imam, I struggled with them, that's Natsinan, the Akalaleim, and I cursed them, that's Laitinan, the Akemehem Anashim, and I struck some of the men, that's Machinan, the Amartim, and I pulled out some of their hair, Lamarate, the Ashbiyim, and I tied them up. So we see that Nehemiah did all of these things. He had to actually struggle with some of the recalcitrant men who didn't want to divorce their wives. Uminalan, and what is the source? To kaftinan ve'asrinan ve'avdinan hardafa. Finally, this is the 15th halacha. What is the source that the beitin can kaftinan, tie their hands and feet together, ve'asrinan, jail them, ve'avdinan hardafa, and can do pursuit on them? The Gemara doesn't know what this word hardafa means yet, so we're going to have to discuss it. What is this meaning of hardafa? Dichtiv, as we see said in a certain verse, this is back in Ezra, Hein lamut, some will be sentenced to die. Hein lishroshi, we don't know what that word means. We'll come to it. Hein le'anash, some for punishment. Le'anash nichsin, to have their property appropriated. V'le'asurin, and some to be imprisoned. Miley Shrushe, so the Gemara asks, what is this? We know Lamavet means death. We know La'anash Nechasin means to appropriate property. We know La'asurin means to put them in jail. What's Lishrushi? So Miley Shroshi, what does it mean, Lishrushi? Amar Ada Mari, Amar Nechemia Bar Baruch, Amar Rav Chia Bar Avin, Amar Rav Yehuda. Whole series of in the name of Yehuda, we learn that this is Hardafa. Lishroshi means Hardafa, which is one of the things that we said. You could do hardafa to them. My hardafa, okay, but what's hardafa? So hardafa comes from the word lirdof, which means to chase after. So you could translate it as pursuit. However, listen to the way Rav Yehuda explains it. Amar Rav Yehuda breder of Shmuel bar Shilat Mishmei de Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, what it means is min nadin la altar. You put them immediately into nidui, this lower form of excommunication. Vishon in la achar lamed, and then you repeat it for another 30 days after the first 30 days. Umacharmin in la achar shishim, and then after 60 days, you go to a higher level of excommunication and you put them in chayrim. So there's a 90-day process here: 30 days of nidui, 30 days of nidui, 30 days of chayrim. So I think the proper translation of hardafa is not pursuit, but more like persistence. In other words, we persist in chastising them with this series of periods of time of excommunicating to put pressure on them to do the right thing. Amar le Rav Huna bar Chinana, hachi Amar Rav Chista. This is what Rav Chista said. Matrin bay, you have to give them hatra, which is a warning. Sheni v'chamishi v'sheni, Monday, Thursday, and Monday. Now, it's not 100% clear where this hatra fits in to the timeline. Some people, like the Ran, says that what it means is that before you excommunicate someone, you have to warn them. So, meaning the whole order of them would go like this. You summon someone the first time to Beit Din, they don't show. You summon them the second time, they don't show. You summon them the third time, they don't show. At that point, you would have to warn them on Monday, warn them on Thursday, and warn them on Monday. If you don't come to Beit Din, we're going to put you into Nidui. If you don't come to Beit Din, we're going to put you into Nidui. And then after that additional period of time, you can excommunicate them. Another way of looking at it, which some of the other Rishonim mention, is that perhaps they can excommunicate them right away. They can put them into Nidui immediately, but in between the first Nidui and the second Nidui, they would have to have a break where they warned him, if you don't come back, if you don't come to Beit Din, we're going to put you into a second Nidui. If you don't come to Beit Din, we're going to put you into a second Nidui. So perhaps it's in between them, but they can do the first Nidui immediately. Finally, and this is the last thing we'll do, we mentioned that there are two different kinds of nidui, which is relevant, and we'll see it again as we go forward. Hane mile, these words, limamona, are only when the court is summoning someone who owes someone money. So you have a dispute between two people about a matter of money. So if you summon the person to come to court so that you can adjudicate the matter, and they don't come, you can put them into nidui. And you warn them, etc. Aval la'afkirute, la'afkiruta la'altar. But if the person is guilty of either denigrating the rabbis or saying they, you know, saying something heretical, if it is something related to disrespect of Judaism or the rabbis, that's why they were put into a nidui. So then there is no warning. The warning only goes to say you should make payment. You should pay the guy back or come to court. Pay the guy back or come to court. If you don't, we're going to put you into nidui. But if the issue is that he said embarrassed a big rabbi in public, and that's why he was put into nidui, then they don't need to warn him. They can put him into nidui right away. Okay, we'll stop there and continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.